Hi, and welcome to the Well Read Podcast, a bi-weekly discussion on books and reading. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Anne.
And we are librarians with the Beaufort County Library in South Carolina. This week, we're going to be talking about books that take us back to school, since it's that back to school time on Facebook. I keep seeing pictures of kids on their first day of school.
That's all I see on Facebook right now. And it makes me sad because I want to be going back to school, too.
Does it?
Yeah. I feel like I got my ultimate back to school experience when I finally went to grad school because I was in a place that actually had cooler air for the first time because I didn't grow up in a cold place. And there's that crisp air that just sort of feels like, oh, it's time to learn again. And I really crave that. So it was really hard for me when the semester where I finished grad school and I was still working at a university and everyone was going back to school and I just felt so sad. Oh, I wanted to be back so badly. But
no new school supplies for you.
No, that's part of the fun. It's new clothes. It's new school supplies. Mm-hmm. You get to meet new people. Yes. And it's just exciting.
Yes, so. I loved that about college in particular is every semester you took new classes and were able to meet new people.
Yeah.
So what do you think the appeal of school books about going to school? What is the appeal for you?
I think it's recapturing that feeling. And even when you're past it in your own life, you can still sort of relive it a little bit and remember those excited feelings. Mm-hmm. I think it really is kind of the idea of a new beginning and that you can start out your school year being a new person and sort of slough off the old identity that you once had and become whoever you want to be that year. Mm-hmm. I never had that experience, but I always, in books, it always made it seem like that could happen. So I thought that was something that seemed really appealing.
Yes. Especially high school. I feel like there's so much change that can happen as you're growing up in high school that over a summer, I think we talked about this when we did our YA episode how so much things can change completely in your life over a summer. You can almost grow up in a summer. So then you go back to school as a new person.
Yeah.
I like, too, that it's sort of the same reason I like books that take place in a small town, because it's a very much contained environment. You know, it's a certain community that you're working with, and there are certain traditions and things that are quirky to just that set of people.
Yeah.
And I really like that aspect of it, too, because reading about it. So, for example, I read boarding school book and I didn't go to boarding school, and there are all these things about boarding school that seem so interesting and kind of exotic because I never experienced that. And so I like reading about that too, because it opens up that world to me of something that it was a very enclosed world that I wouldn't have known about otherwise. Yeah.
Well, I feel like the appeal of something like Harry Potter isn't just the magic, it's the school setting.
Oh, definitely.
And people get really excited about this boarding school that or you're away from your family, you're living with a bunch of other kids. There's something that's really exciting about that. But so few people get that experience.
Right.
So you want to live it vicariously.
Yes. Everybody wants to go to Hogwarts, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. They do. So how do you define a back to school book? What would you?
Well, when I started thinking about it for this, it was really just any book that focused on a school, a school setting, you know, and it wasn't just that the characters were in school. It was really the school played a primary role in the story is how I looked at it for this topic. Because when I started thinking, there were books that were popping to mind, but I thought, well, really, that's only a background issue that they're in school. You know, a lot of teen books, they're in high school, but that's not at the forefront of the story.
Right.
So I tried to look at it as where the school environment or being in school really played a large role in the story. What about you?
Basically the same thing. Mm-hmm. I wrote down the same thing. Even if it's college or elementary school, then you still have to have something that centers around the school. It can't just be that they're going to class and then having their own lives, but the kind of the study or the clubs or something has to play into the action of the story. Right. So
yeah, agreed. I was mad that I already talked about Wonder by R.J. Palacio.
I know, there's so many books that I thought, that
would have been perfect because that's a prime example of a school book. All right, so should we get started with our suggestions?
Sure. Okay.
You want to go first?
Sure. So my first book is maybe a little bit outside of what the criteria we just decided on, but I picked The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova. And just to start out, this is a vampire book. And usually when I tell people about this, they hear vampires and they say, no, I'm not interested in that. But it's based on real history. And so it sort of has a different take on the vampire legend than your Twilights and other assorted vampire stories. So, and it's kind of a complicated story. So try to do justice in it, in explaining it. The book starts in Amsterdam in 1972, and it begins with a teenage girl finding a medieval book and a bunch of old letters in her father's study. And the letters are addressed to my dear and unfortunate successor. So, So this girl, she's unnamed. She confronts her father, who is named Paul, and he tells the story of what happened to him 20 years prior to the 70s. When he was searching for his graduate school advisor, who is named Professor Rossi, and this professor disappeared after telling Paul that the historical figure of Vlad the Impaler was actually still alive and that all the Dracula legends that we grow up hearing are real. After he tells the story of this experience with his professor, then Paul himself disappears and leaves a note for his daughter. So that starts her story. So there's kind of these three stories within each other. You get the Professor Rossi's story in the 1930s, and then Paul in the 1950s, and Paul's daughter in the 1970s. So they sort of overlap a little bit. And all these characters go all over Europe searching for Vlad the Impaler. So you see all these amazing places like Budapest and Istanbul, and it just makes you want to travel so badly. That was, I think, the thing I remembered the most from reading this book the first time, was that I just made lists of places I wanted to go. This is kind of outside that back to school book because it doesn't really take place at a school, but to me it reads like a love letter to academia, because there are all these characters that are in a university setting and they're doing this research, and there's this huge love of research that's going on through the whole book. And for someone that really likes to research, then that's super appealing to me. I think any librarian can kind of feel a little warm fuzzy reading this book. And of course, because they're not in the current day, they're getting to search through old manuscripts and old papers. And so there's this aspirational, I guess, feeling of wishing you could be in school during a time like that, mm-hmm. when you weren't just doing all your research in an online database,
right.
Which is a great thing, but we still kind of miss being able to search through papers.
Yes.
So if you enjoy school and you enjoy the research process, that might be a little bit more of an appeal to you. But there is a lot of stuff that happens within letters, and you're reading documents and things. And for some people, they want more action. But if you kind of like sort of hunkering down into a big book, then this is a really good story for you.
That seems like a good fall book to me, because I haven't read it before, but it's this big, thick book.
I've seen it
on the shelf before, and it seems like a good one to read as if the weather is getting cooler and you can curl up on the couch with it.
Exactly.
It seems like that would be a good one to sink into.
Yeah. It's cozy. I love it. It's The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova.
All right. So the first one is Lies We Tell Ourselves by Robin Talley. And it is about a young girl named Sarah Dunbar, and she is one of 10 Black students to be admitted to the historically white Jefferson High School in Davisburg, Virginia in 1959. And this is a made-up place, Davisburg, Virginia, but it is based in fact that there were a lot of schools in the South, and particularly in Virginia, that at this time were closing public schools in order to work around the law that they had to integrate their schools. So they would close down the public schools because the white families could go to private schools, and then they were leaving the Black families with nowhere to send their children. So this is a school where they kept the public school open and they were going to integrate it. And Sarah's family moves from Chicago to Virginia specifically so she can attend the school and be part of this aspect of the civil rights movement. And there's a lot of pressure on her, and her sister goes as well, to be an example of being a great student and a good person and, you know, being able to put up with all of these things that are going to be thrown at them. And a good portion of the book actually takes place on just the first day of school and their experiences of these 10 children, or teenagers, mm-hmm. I shouldn't call them children, having to go into this environment. And it shows how much courage it took to endure the forms of extreme hatred, really, that was being thrown at them, literally thrown, objects being thrown at them. And just there was so much hatred directed at these Black students for coming into this school. There's another girl who is promoting this hatred through editorials in the school newspaper, and her name is Linda Hairston. Her father is the editor of the local newspaper, so she feels like she has some authority on the topic of writing these editorials, and she blames these 10 kids for disrupting her school year, that they have basically ruined what I think is her senior year.
I'm pretty sure it's her senior year
of high school. Sarah and Linda are paired up to work on a school project together, and they start absolutely hating each other, obviously. And then they learn to at first respect each other, and then it sort of grows into a friendship and maybe a little bit more between them. And it's told in alternating chapters from each girl's perspective. And each chapter begins with a lie, such as this has nothing to do with me, or I'm not brave enough for this. And then the chapter that follows explains why that is a lie. It sheds light on topics like racism and sexism and homosexuality and child abuse. But I never really felt like the story got bogged down by that. I mean, it's a very serious book,
right.
But it never, there wasn't a lot of like preaching from the mountaintop about these topics.
Right.
You know, I don't know if I'm explaining that well, but it was very much integral to the story, mm-hmm. all these topics. And it felt very much like it was shining a light on a particular time in American history that these things were going on. And I think it's still very relevant to talk about that today or read about these things today with all of the racial things that are still going on today. But I loved it. I thought it was great. It is a teen book. I did not know that when I read it. I had read an advanced copy of it, so I had no idea it was a teen book. I just had heard good things, and so I picked it up. I really enjoyed it. I think anybody could enjoy the story because the history of it is really great. And that is The Lies We Tell Ourselves by Robin Talley.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one, too. And it seemed like the author could have easily gotten bogged down because she bites off a lot in lots of different topics. And it seemed sometimes when authors do that, they don't really do enough service to all of them.
Right.
And she does a really good job, I think, of incorporating all of it and making it all work together.
I agree. I thought it was really she did an excellent job of making it just seem part of the experience that these people were going through. It wasn't anything like... Nothing felt tacked on. Nothing felt like it was just put in there because this is a teen issues book and these are the issues we want to tackle. It really felt like it was part of the story.
Yeah, I think it's a good one.
All right, what's your next one?
So my next one is Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell.
I love this one.
We've mentioned it like
every episode.
We've mentioned it a lot. I don't think an episode goes by without a Rainbow Rowell shout out. So
she's as gonna, it should be.
I know. She'll get so sick of us on Twitter that we tag her all the time. Thanks, Rainbow. So we're finally going to talk about it instead of just mentioning it. But this came out a couple of years ago, and it's about a girl named Kath who is starting college in Nebraska, and she's also starting with her twin sister, Ren. And they're both freshmen college students. They're away from home for the first time, and Kath especially is worried about leaving her dad, who is alone because the mother left the family. I can't remember how early... she left the family, but she's been gone for a little while. So Kath is pretty nervous about going to college. And so she wants to be roommates with Ren and have them do everything together. And Ren really wants to have these new experiences by herself. And so she sort of abandons Kath to find her own way and to find her own comfort zone. So Kath comforts herself by diving into the world of Simon Snow, which is sort of a stand-in for Harry Potter. It's a really famous series of books and movies, and there's a rabid fan base, and you just kind of get all these details that indicate this is a Harry Potter fandom. Mm-hmm. And Kath and Ren used to write Simon Snow fan fiction together, but Ren has since sort of let go of this world and has moved on a little bit. And they were actually pretty famous in the fan forums for writing these stories and had kind of a little bit of a following. So even though Ren has given this up, then Simon Snow becomes a really safe place for Kath to be when she's struggling with being away from home for the first time. And things are kind of feeling out of control in her life with college and with some things with her dad. But she also finds that the Simon Snow reality that she's set up for herself is getting in the way of actual reality. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of creates some tension in the story. So it's really a book about how hard it can be to let go of childhood and how we're sort of forced to be adults sometimes when we're not necessarily ready and we don't want to be, but that you just sort of have to do it. I think it does a really, really great job of showing what it's like to start college when there's the fear and excitement of starting new classes and meeting new people and potential romance. And you push yourself and you find out the things that you're capable of in ways that you didn't when you're a teenager and you're in high school. So it's just a completely delightful book. I think that this is one I stayed up all night to read, and I don't know how she writes these books that are so readable but so beautiful and so deep, and it's just amazing. So in our fall book preview, then you talked about Carry On is coming out in October, I think.
I don't remember now. I think end of September, October.
And so this is the spinoff of Fangirl, where it focuses on the world of Simon Snow and sort of tells that story. So if you haven't read Fangirl yet, then you can read that first and then get excited for Carry On in October, and it'll be delightful.
Yes, I loved that book. Obviously, we talk about this every time. But I felt like that completely captured what the college experience mm-hmm. can be like, of being, like you said, excited but uncertain.
Yeah.
Figuring things out as you're going along. And especially the separation she feels from her twin, mm-hmm. which she expected them to continue their life the way they had been. And
right.
then she's sort of thrown out into the deep end of the pool because she has to deal with it on her own
right.
and not with her sister. And
right.
there's just, yeah, it was wonderful.
Well, and I like that she's really comfortable in her writing, that
yes.
she's been
confident.
Really successful yes. and confident. Yeah. And then everything else in her life
yes.
is just sort of this mystery to
yes.
her. And so she'll dive back in and yeah. feel kind of get shored up a little bit with her confidence and yeah. then face the real world
really.
Again. So I love it. It's a great book.
And my next one is Testimony by Anita Shreve. And it has a kind of ripped from the headlines premise. It is sort of related to the time when the Duke lacrosse players were accused of raping the girl. I'm not remembering the details of that story
right,
now, but it turned out that
it was fabricated. Yeah.
Right. The media jumped on it as if it was immediately that they were guilty. And
right.
it turned out that it was fabricated. Anyway, so it's sort of related. I'm guessing that's where she got her inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place at a New England boarding school where there's a sex scandal where three basketball players are caught on tape. The act that is caught on tape involves a freshman girl. And these are three varsity basketball players. And the recording is put up on the internet. So immediately it's everywhere. And the book is told from multiple points of view, and it hits on all the ramifications for those involved, the parents, the kids, the other students, the school administration, everybody that could even be remotely involved in this. It hits on all the different perspectives. And the reaction is immediate and devastating, and it ruins marriages, it destroys futures, and there's some death involved because of the fallout from this one incident. And that's part of why I liked the book so much, is because without getting into too much of what comes out about the incident, is it's one event
mm-hmm.
in these people's lives, and how much that changes the direction of the rest of their lives because of one day in their lives, and what led up to it, and then what follows, and how much that has an impact on their entire world.
Yeah.
And I thought that the author does a really good job of showing a lot of compassion for all of the people involved. There's nobody who's a villain mm-hmm. or the hero. It's just everybody has flaws, and everybody's trying to do, I don't want to say the right thing, because obviously this is like a bad incident, but everybody's just trying to deal with the thing as best as they can mm-hmm. after the fact. And I thought that she did that with a lot of heart, and I really liked that about it. And there's a lot to examine about peer pressure, the instant exposure that comes from the internet now. It's something that a lot of us didn't have to deal with as
yeah.
we were growing up, and what that means for kids now, which I think we talked about in another episode.
Yeah, our terror, our complete
yes.
terror of what kids deal with
yes,
now.
Exactly. and family expectations and underage drinking, especially this is a boarding school. It's an elite boarding school, mm-hmm. and not some of the kids are there because they have the money for it, and some of the kids are there because of scholarships. And so what that means for their families and the expectations that the parents are placing on these kids. And I think it would make a great book club book, because mm-hmm. there's so much to discuss. There's a lot. It's a great story, but there's a lot of issues in there to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed it. It was one of those that I couldn't put down while I was reading it, because I was just eager to find out what happened next. And it's a little bit like watching a train wreck, because you know that the end result isn't, You know, starting
yeah.
with a bad event, and so things aren't going to turn out rosy at the end, but it was really compelling to read. And that was Testimony by Anita Shreve.
That sounds really interesting, and still stuff like that is going on
yeah,
in the media, too.
Yeah, this came out in 2007 or 2008, I think, so it's been a little while since this has been published, but still very relevant.
Yeah.
It's not like, no, I read it at the time it came out, so I can't guarantee that some of the technological parts of it aren't going to read like, oh, are you serious? You know, because it'll seem outdated. But as far as just the general idea
right.
of these things that are put on the internet, I think that's still very relevant.
Yeah. Okay. So my last book is Village School by Miss Reed. And this is the first in the Fair Acre series, which centers around the rural English village of Fair Acre. It came out in 1955, and it's Miss Reed herself is a pseudonym for Dora Saint, who was a schoolmistress before she started writing these books. And the series actually continued until 1996. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's 20 of them. I had no idea that it was that extensive, and she just died a couple of years ago. So even though it reads like something that's from centuries ago, it still was fairly current. There's not really a plot to the book. It's just these little vignettes of the school and village life throughout the year. So you get chapters on the harvest festival and Christmas things, and there's an April birthday party. And it's just completely delightful.
So lovely.
It sounds so cozy. I think that it really plays into the back to school feel, because you get to remember what it's like in elementary school before you actually really had homework and studying to do. You just sort of did activities at school.
Crafts.
Yeah, they were so great. Oh, I miss that so much.
Well, you know, coloring is now a big thing for adults.
So I know.
You could still have that, yeah, a little bit.
And do some crafts. I guess I'd get to do that at work sometimes. Yes. So yay. Okay. Basically in elementary school. So Jan Karen, who wrote the Mitford series, was heavily influenced by Miss Reed. Oh. And if you read the Fairacre series and you read the Mitford series, Fairacre makes Mitford look like the gritty police procedural, like darkest thing in the entire world, because this is the most gentle fiction you can possibly imagine. There's nothing at all. And there's no conflict. It's just all cute little stories. So if you're looking for something that's extremely just feel good and soft, then this is it. And I have to confess that when I was a teenager, my mom was reading the Mitford series. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I didn't read very widely at the time. And the Mitford series represented everything that I hated in the world. And so I used to hide my mom's books. So I feel like this is my karmic retribution. Yes. That I love the Fairacre series.
I hope Anne's mom is listening to this and laughing.
She probably hasn't found the books that I hid from her at this point. So, I mean, I can't even tell you. There are characters that go through the story, but it isn't like it culminates in anything. It's just kind of these little experiences that these kids have and the teachers have teaching them and the way that the village operates. And it's just completely delightful. I think it's, in fact, I checked out the book to sort of review it, and I thought, I've got to reread this. Yes. I just want to, it feels so much like back to school that I have to read this book.
It sounds again. So charming.
So, yeah. And so if you watch, like, it kind of makes me think of stuff like Gilmore Girls, when yes. you sort of get into the seasons and the holidays that they go through on the show. Yeah. Obviously there's not the kind of the dramatic push that the show has, but it just has that sort of warm, cozy blanket feeling. Yeah. That is very similar to the series. So it's, from what I understand, a lot of people don't know about it.
No, but, I don't think, it sounds a little bit to me like Anne of Green Gables, too.
Kind of, yeah.
A little like a
yeah.
village and
yeah. the adventures. Without any plot.
Right.
Which may not sound like a good recommendation to some people, but if you just want something that's really charming, then this is a really, really fun book. So that's Miss Reed, Village School by Miss Reed. And if you like that one, you've got 19 more to get through.
Sounds like a fall project to me.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to take a turn to the very dark from the very light.
The Mitford
charming.
Side of this.
Yes. Yes, we're going to go to Mitford now. My last one is The Secret History by Donna Tartt.
Ooh.
Have you read this?
I haven't, but I've heard such amazing things about it.
All right. So
it sounds terrifying.
Yes. A lot of people who are listening maybe have already read it, but it is about a boy named Richard, and he is from a small, really kind of dull, quiet place in California. And he decides he wants to attend Elite Hampton College in Vermont. And it's his private school, and he has to kind of struggle to get in. He doesn't come up from a background where his parents are supportive or are willing to help him in this endeavor. And so he does get in, and he goes there, and he studies Greek. And so that's his plan, to study Greek there. But it's not just majoring in a subject like we would think of mm-hmm. from our college experience. This involves him being accepted by a professor into a program where there are 5 students that this professor tutors, basically teaches, and takes over all of their academics. They don't go to other classes beyond studying with this professor.
Wow.
And the professor is aloof and eccentric, and the whole experience just seems very insular. You know, they're a small group, and he teaches in sort of like a tower room, you know, like a garret or something. Anyway, and so it's hard for Richard to gain entry, because this group of students that have been with this professor are very tight-knit and very close, and so it's hard to get himself in there. And he sort of has to lie about his background to feel like he can be accepted. But he is ultimately included in the group for the most part. He still feels a little bit like an outsider, but he is accepted into the group. And the book actually opens with the death of one of the members of the group, and the other students have killed him. You know that.
Whoa.
And then it goes back, and for about half the book is the story leading up to what caused this murder, and then the second half is what happens after and the fallout for the characters. It's psychologically dark, as I said. We're taking a big turn from Misread. And it's definitely a thriller. There's the mystery aspect of why these things are happening. But I'd say it's more for somebody who just wants the psychological thriller aspect than the mystery. And the only word I could think of the whole time I was reading it was claustrophobic. Like, it just felt so contained. It was just these five students in this small school in Vermont. And with this one professor, there were not a lot of outside influences. There's a little bit of like town and gown kind of story there. And there's a little bit of that, but it's mainly focused on these characters, and they party a lot and they drink a lot. And they're very influenced by Greek, like the Greek way of the classic Greek way of living and the Bacchanalia and all that sort of stuff. And so that plays a role in it. And it's a big book. I think it was maybe 500 or 600 pages, but it's, I wouldn't call it a page turner, but you're eager to find out what happens, how all the events play out, especially because it opens with such a dramatic scene, and then you kind of see what happens as it goes along. And the characters aren't very likable. So it's not that that's the draw, that you care about the characters necessarily. It's just you're sort of enthralled by what is happening in the story and what the actions that they're taking. So that's The Secret History by Donna Tartt.
I know several people that list this as their favorite book ever. And so I think I own it. One of the many books that I own that I've never read, but it just sounds like it's perfect for me. It sounds really, really amazing.
I read The Goldfinch first, which I loved. And that's a very divisive book as well. People have either love it or hate it kind of reactions to that book. And so a lot of people, when I told them I loved The Goldfinch, said, well, you have to read The Secret History because it's so much better. Donna, I don't necessarily feel that way, I should say. I really liked The Goldfinch for what it was, and I liked The Secret History for what it was, and I wasn't really trying to compare them. And they felt very different to me, because The Goldfinch is more expansive, and it follows this boy throughout much of his life, and The Secret History takes place over the course of like a year, I think, or, you know, a small set of time in a specific place. So it was just a different kind of story. But Donna Tartt writes one book every 10 years. So I think people really wait with anticipation for the next book that comes out. But this was her first one. It did receive a lot of acclaim, rightfully so. It's a very interesting book, definitely for people who like their stories a little darker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not all light and happiness, but it was good.
It should be perfect. Like, I shouldn't like Misread. I should be only reading that kind of thing.
I was thinking that as you were talking. I was like, I'm kind of surprised that you
like
that.
I know. It's my opposite. But sometimes I have a heart.
Sometimes.
I don't know how that happens
buried
to me.
In there.
It emerges once every 10 years.
Just like Donna Tartt.
Exactly.
So that wraps up our suggestions on books to read about school and going back to school. We will be right back after this brief break with what we're reading this week. And now, Anne, what are you reading right now?
So I just finished a book last night called Best Boy by Eli Gottlieb. And this just came out, I think, last week, either this week or last week. It's a book about Todd Aaron, who's an autistic man in his 50s. And he's been living for years in an assisted living facility. He's one of their oldest residents, and he's been there for most of his life, I think. And he's kind of considered I think they call him like the old man of the campus, or he's sort of the role model for everyone else that's coming in. Todd is very nostalgic for his childhood home and his family. And he only has one brother that's still alive, but he has these really vivid memories of his mother that he was just completely enamored with, but also really dark memories of his abusive father and brother. So after years of living in this place, with really no events happening, then several things happen at once that upset him. there's a new staff member that comes into the facility that reminds him of his father. And he also has a new roommate that's really obnoxious and just kind of is verbally abusive to Todd. And then he also is convinced by a new arrival to the facility to stop taking his medication. So all of these I can't remember exactly the length of time where these happen, but it's a pretty short amount of time where these three things happen all at once. So they build up until he decides to run away and to go back to this home that he idealizes, and it's several hundred miles away. So he just gets a map and kind of plans how he's going to do this. Even though he knows only his brother lives there now, he sort of has this, like, feels like everything once he gets there will be okay, and that he'll be back sort of in the arms of his mother. The thing that really makes this remarkable, this book, is that it's written from Todd's perspective. So it's captivating to see the world as he sees it. So you have sort of these heartbreaking moments where he doesn't quite process the way he's being mistreated, but then you also see all these details that he finds such enjoyment in, and that he just has this really beautiful way of looking at the world. And the relationship in particular, the way he remembers his mother and their relationship, is just so beautiful. And the way the book ends is just, it's just a great ending. I think it would be really easily to write this badly, mm-hmm. And to make it kind of, that's a kind of a scary thing to take on, a perspective mm-hmm. of someone when you don't have that experience yourself. But I feel like Gottlieb's writing is really sensitive to it, and it doesn't really demonize people. I mean, there's a little bit of mistreatment that he goes through, and you sort of end up not liking those characters, but you sort of get their perspective as well of how hard this would be to give up things in your life in order to take care of someone mm-hmm. that you didn't anticipate taking care of. Mm-hmm. The first book that Eli Gottlieb wrote was called The Boy Who Went Away, and it's also about autism. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like this is a subject that he's very close to. Yes. But although I couldn't find anything, I didn't do tons of research, but I couldn't find anything to indicate whether this is something in his family right. or something he's experienced. But it seems like something that he feels close to. Mm-hmm. It's and actually a really fast read. I read it in just a couple of days. Mm-hmm. But it's just really, really good. I think that it will deserve some awards probably.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah. I felt like there wasn't really any superfluous language. Mm-hmm. Everything was really tightly written in the book, and I just loved it. It's a 5-star book for me, oh, I think. Okay. So and that's Best Boy by Eli Gottlieb.
All right. That sounds a little bit like The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime by Mark Haddon. Did you ever read that about that?
No, but I, yeah, yeah, there's lots of comparisons
yes,
to this.
It sounds similar in yeah. the taking the perspective of somebody with autism and how they view the world. And it's again, very sensitively done.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, the book I just finished is called A Window Opens by Elizabeth Egan. And this is a book I was expecting to be sort of like a light chick lit women's fiction kind of a book, or mommy lit,
like,
or whatever
yeah.
they call that. And I was really pleasantly surprised
really?
At how much I enjoyed this. Not that I love a good chick lit, you sure. know this about
sure.
me, but I was pleasantly surprised at the depth, I will
yeah.
say, that there was more to it than what I was expecting.
Oh,
really.
That's interesting. Yeah. Totally expected the same thing.
Yeah, because the book's kind of like a pink coral kind mm-hmm. of a color. And I don't know, a hand-drawn woman, I think, on the front with a book open in front
yeah.
of her face. Anyway, but so it's about a woman named Alice Pierce, and she is the mother of three, and she works part-time as the books editor at a women's magazine. And her husband is a lawyer at kind of a high-powered big law firm in New York City. She's very happy with her life as it is. And then her husband finds out he's not going to make partner at the law firm. So basically, what I understand is if you don't move up, you move out in those sorts of situations,
oh.
you know, because he's not going to make partner, that says that they don't have faith in him. And so he decides he's going to leave the law firm and start his own practice. Because of that, she decides she needs to get a full-time job to help support the family financially. And she finds a job at a place called Scroll, which is an internet startup company that is promising to change the future of reading, because they're going to create a chain of these literary lounges that are really cool, where you can sit and browse ebooks and sit and read. And then they have like walls of first edition, so they're going to cater to people who still like the paper carbon-based books is what
yeah.
they call them. And so really try to capture both the technological and physical love of reading. And so she thinks that this is like her dream job, basically, that she's going to be able to do. So she is super excited, and she starts to learn more about the company as she gets there. And she's thrown into this world of like this lingo that she's not used to. And the pace is very fast, and people are constantly emailing and texting and all, you know, wanting immediate responses because this is the world, the fast paced world of this business. And at the same time, her best friend in the town where they live outside of New York has the only independent bookstore in this town. And she loves, Alice loves this bookstore. She's done events with her friends there and stuff, or her friend there. And so the future of this business, Scroll, which hasn't started yet, and the promise that they're making, her best friend feels like is probably going to put her small independent bookstore out of business. So there's some tension there because between Alice and her best friend. Like I said, I was so surprised at the depth that came from the story because it's all about the challenge of juggling motherhood with a full-time job and how much time she's spending concentrating on work, doing work things, what she has to miss that she used to be able to do for her children, be there for her children, for their events that she now can't be there because she has to be at work. At the same time, her father has cancer, and so that's an added stress to her life, and she feels like she wants to be there for him, and she has to juggle that with her kids, and then her husband is struggling a little bit with the transition to starting his own business, and he's maybe drinking too much, and so she's trying to deal with that. So it's just really insightful, and there was a lot of humor to it too, which made it fun. But there was a lot that it said about women having it all, which is something I think that is thrown around a lot, and how difficult that can be, and what the expectations are for women. And I just really, really loved it, and recommend it highly to anybody who wants a good book about just a good story of a woman trying to figure out if she can have all these things in her life and what the important things are in her life and her priorities, right. I'll say. And I really enjoyed it. It's called A Window Opens by Elizabeth Egan. It's also fun. You get a little sneak peek into books and publishing. And she talks about if you get a job at this company, one of the perks is you get your own first edition of a book that you get to choose. And so all the different books that the different employees have chosen. And there's just a lot of literary references in there that are fun for somebody who likes to read.
Yeah.
So I don't think you don't think you have to be a big reader to appreciate them, but I think it's extra fun if you are.
That sounds amazing.
Yes, it was really good. So that's it for us today. And why don't you go back and tell us everything you talked about?
So for this week, I picked The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova, Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell, Village School by Miss Reed, and Best Boy by Elib Gottlieb is what I'm reading this week.
All right. And I talked about Lies We Tell Ourselves by Robin Talley, Testimony by Anita Shreve, The Secret History by Donna Tartt, and what I read this week was A Window Opens by Elizabeth Egan. If you want to get in touch with us to give us feedback or a suggestion on a topic you'd like us to discuss, you can email us at wellreadpod@gmail.com or reach us on Twitter at wellreadpodcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes or your other podcast provider of choice. We got another review on iTunes today, or this week, I should say, not today. Thank you, whoever did that. It was somebody from this area because they were Low Country something was their username. So thank you, whoever did that. We appreciate it. Our podcast is engineered by Adam Farver. Our theme music is Kitten by Poddington Bear. We keep our show notes at beaufortcountylibrary.org/wellread, where you can find a listing of every book we talked about in this episode. If you'd like a book recommendation list tailored specifically for you, please go to beaufortcountylibrary.org/mynextbook and take a brief survey on what type of books you like. You will need a BCL library card in order to use this service. And thank you all for listening, and happy reading.